Last week, I spent a long time talking about all the blueprints that we've been reading, so I'm not going to talk about that today. A bunch of us went to see that movie, The Jesus Revolution, and I want to talk about that. It was a good movie, and one of the reasons that we went is we want to support Christian movies. So we went to the theater and sat down and endured all the booming speakers and all the previews for superhero movies and all that kind of stuff, and then we got to see the movie. It was a good movie. I think it was Patricia that said they kept talking about the gospel, but nobody ever spoke the gospel. That's true. But it's the story of the Jesus Revolution that happened between 1967 and 1972. And it was a story of Lonnie Frisbee and Chuck Smith and one other pastor. It's interesting that that period was 67 to 72. I graduated from college in 67. I was not part of the Jesus Revolution. I was in the Army. Very different experience. But what was going on at a high level is the United States had been awash in prosperity ever since World War II. We were fat and we were well attended to, and then we had a crisis. And the crisis was the Vietnam War. What happened there is a whole bunch of young college-age men decided they didn't want to go. So they were trying to figure out reasons not to go. So it's interesting that the Jesus Revolution stopped when the Vietnam War stopped. As I say, it's an interesting phenomenon. And when there's a crisis, people start searching. The crisis was not just among the college-age men. Of course, it was among their parents, who were upset that their kids had run off and become hippies. It was among the young women, who were, of course, the ones who would normally marry those young men. And so it was a big deal. There were race riots in the cities. As part of that, what happened was the generation that was dropping out decided they were being lied to. And probably they were. I mean, the media was pretty much the same then as it is now. But what they were looking for is an intellectually satisfying reason to get out of this. And one of the things, well, you've been lying to us. The music of that era was the music that I was listening to in my 20s and 30s. And it was all about peace, love, and truth. That was the motif of all of the music at that point. We want peace, we want love, all that kind of stuff. What it actually became was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I was there, I know. The thing is, God predicts this. And I'm going to read to you from Deuteronomy. I'm in Deuteronomy 32. This is Moses' final farewell to his people. But Jeshurun, Israel, grew fat and kicked. He grew fat, stout, and sleek. Then he forsook the God who made him and scoffed at the rock of his salvation. They stirred into jealousy with strange gods. With abominations, they provoked him to anger. They sacrificed to demons that were not gods, to gods that they had never known, to new gods they had come recently, whom their fathers had never dreaded. You were unmindful of the rock that bore you, and you forgot the God who gave you birth. The Lord saw it and spurned them because of the provocation of his sons and daughters, and he said, I will hide my face from them. I will see what their end will be, for they are a perverse generation, children in whom is no faithfulness. The idea here is God blesses Israel. Israel then gets fat, sleek, and complacent. God blessed the United States. We get fat, sleek, and complacent. And what was happening to the generation that dropped out was we got so fat, sleek, and complacent that we quit going to church, we quit raising our children, we subbed that out to other people, and we didn't give them a full spiritual foundation. I'll use myself as an example. I got sent to Sunday school. My parents didn't take me to church. They sent me periodically to Sunday school. So other than sort of a general understanding of Christianity, I didn't have any kind of a foundation. Now, I went into the Army where sex, drugs, and rock and roll, well, sex and rock and roll were okay. Drugs were not. Couldn't do drugs. So I didn't. But my point is, that generation was raised in prosperity and spiritual barrenness. So what they did is they started searching, because God has made man to need meaning. And I'll read you a passage of scripture from Ecclesiastes. It's one of my favorites. I use it all the time. It should be familiar to you. Ecclesiastes 3:10. You have seen the business that God has given to the children of men to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. So the idea is he has wired us to seek meaning. That generation was not getting meaning from the places where God would like them to get it, from church. So they went looking. And we had Buddhism, and we had Hinduism, and we had all sorts of Eastern religions. In fact, one of the things that I chuckled at in the movie is as they were handing out tracts, they were giving tracts to the Hare Krishnas. Y'all remember the Hare Krishnas? Maybe not old enough, but it was the same thing. It was a religious movement that rose up in response to a vacuum in the culture. The other place they were looking for truth was drugs. So you had tune in, turn on, and drop out, which is to say, let's take drugs. You'll get spiritually enlightened. All that was going on during that time. I lived through it. I know you all are too young, but you understand what I'm saying. Now, out of that arose the Jesus movement among the hippies. And it was among the hippies because those are the ones who were looking, who were seeking. They were looking for something. They didn't know what they were looking for. And some of them actually found God. And then the movie, of course, was about this massive influx of young people into churches. And by the way, there were a number of churches birthed there that still are going strong today. The Vineyard down the street was part of that movement. The Calvary Chapel. So there was a lot of fruit from that. But once the crisis was over, the Vietnam War was over, the movement died. Now, there were a lot of people that it stuck with. Praise God. I'm not knocking those folks. But when you're in a period of great prosperity, the thing that wakes you up is some kind of a crisis. And it was the Vietnam War in this case. So the question is, as we pop forward to today, we're also seeing stirrings of revival. You remember Ashbury? By the way, that lasted exactly 12 days. The college authorities shut it down because it was interfering with students taking tests and all that kind of stuff. So it went on for 12 days and then it was shut down by the school administration. But the fact is, it happened. And the fact that it happened indicates that there is a hunger out there and we have a crisis. So the question becomes, what is that crisis? We are still reasonably prosperous, but that's starting to change. And you're starting to get people who are not doing quite so well. That will help in this process. The other one is society's breaking down. I've been reading several articles this week. One of them was talking about marriage rates. And as of 2018, among people from the age of 18 to 30, which is the prime fertility window for women, among that age group, 18 to 30, the marriage rate is 29% of the population. Less than a third of the population in that age group is married. Now, that's a problem. Men are expendable, women are perishable. Because, as I'm fond of saying, eggs are expensive, sperm is cheap. So that's the reason you have men going off to war and getting slaughtered in massive numbers, because they're expendable. Women are perishable, which means that they have a short window during which they're maximally fertile. Short window in the span of a lifetime. Seems like a long time when you're 18 years old. Oh, I got all the time in the world. Turns out that doesn't work. So what happens is young women are designed to get pregnant. Young men are designed to make that happen. So they get pregnant, but due to the hookup culture, the guy that gets them pregnant, the woman knows he's not going to be around to take care of her and help her raise her children. Hence, abortion becomes a sacrament. God designed men to take care of families. God designed women to make homes. That isn't happening. Well over two-thirds of that age cohort is not doing that. And so what winds up happening is you have packs of single women and young men going into isolation. Men and women are different. God designed us that way. Women form packs. You know, you get a whole bunch of gals and their friends and so forth, and they talk and chatter and all that kind of stuff, which is fine. That's what you're designed to do. Men, on the other hand, tend to go into isolation. And so what you have is young men sitting in an apartment somewhere looking at a screen all day, going out periodically to find some young woman for a night. So what we have is a crisis there. And you see this crisis in the demonstrations that we see about Roe versus Wade or about anything else. Those things are primarily driven by young women. And that's because they're unattached. Young women who are unattached get into one kind of trouble. Young men who are unattached get into a different kind of trouble, but they both get into trouble. They're angry. Again, you can see that in the demonstrations that you see, these pictures. Young woman screaming her head off and flushed with anger. And it's mostly young women, because as I say, the men tend to go into isolation, whereas the young women are social and they tend to form groups. And what winds up happening is they are driving a lot of these demonstrations that you see. And they're angry because they are not able to do what God designed them to do, which is form families. God made us to do that. What we're supposed to be doing. And for not, what you wind up having is massive social disruption. They're unforgiving. Has everybody heard what happened to Scott Adams, the author of Dilbert? Dilbert used to be, and probably still is, a very popular comic strip. Runs in newspapers and so forth all over the country. He made an incorrect racial remark, and overnight, everybody canceled him. Gone. That's a symbol of unforgiveness, and the unforgiveness is being driven by anger, and the anger is being caused by not being able to fulfill the purpose that God designed you for. Now, the other thing that they do, very much like the 60s and 70s, is they are accepting the world's standards of righteousness. And the hippie movement, peace, love, and truth, became sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Love became sex. Peace became dropping out, and then truth became whatever we can find that sounds good. In fact, there's a joke, I've probably told this lots of times. A Jewish woman goes to India to see the guru, and she goes into his ashram and says, I want to see the guru. You know, you don't have an appointment. I mean, I don't care. I want to see him. All right. So she lets him in and she goes to the guru and says, all right, Sheldon, enough now. Come home. That stuff happened. Lots and lots of people became Eastern mystics and so forth. That was all going on in that time. And again, that's looking for standards in all the wrong places because our culture quit providing it for them. And by the way, our culture hasn't changed. So I have to say this delicately. It's fascinating that Satan works among women. And what we see in Genesis 3 is Satan hates women. He hates everybody, but he especially hates women. So the lie that this generation of women has bought is you can have it all. Don't get married right away. Spend some time. Develop your career. And in fact, the number of times I heard mothers giving marriage advice to their daughters, make sure you finish your college degree so if this doesn't work out, you'll have something to fall back on. What that is you're spring-loaded in the marriage failure position because you're going into it with an escape plan. Satan has given women a lie, which is to say, you can have it all. You can be a doctor, a lawyer, an Indian chief, and then when you get around to it, you can go ahead and have your family, and it'll all be okay. You're going to be fertile till you're 40. And some women are. We have the occasional surprise baby at 40. It does happen. But it's not normal. Normal is somewhere between 18 and 30 is the maximum fertility period. And so if you're wasting that, going off being a doctor or a lawyer or an Indian chief, your chances of forming a family with children are fairly slim. I can remember when I was at the University of Colorado, Gallo was working with had a friend who was a real estate dealer. You know, very high-powered real estate lady, number one sales lady in the corporation. She gets married at about 35. Now I'm going to start a family. She didn't get married, but she didn't start a family. Just didn't happen. So what Satan does is he approaches women first, just like in Genesis, where the serpent talks to the woman, not to the man, and he feeds them a lie. You can be as gods. You can have it all. You can do anything you want. It'll be okay. And occasionally it does work, but not routinely. And so you wind up then with a big cohort of women who aren't doing what they're designed to do, which is start families, and men who aren't doing what they're designed to do, which is take care of their family and earn and protect them and so forth. And so what we have now is a crisis. And that crisis is in the middle of all of our prosperity. And that's why you have people looking around. And interestingly, the people who are looking around most appear to be young men. I was talking to my lovely wife, and she's corresponding with a Latin Mass Catholic up in Wisconsin. This woman is Latin Mass, the Pope is apostate, very conservative and so forth. And she says that their services are packed with a lot of young men who are looking for something. It's going on clear across the country. And again, it's the same phenomenon that we saw in the 60s with this Jesus revolution. People wake up and realize that they've been told a whole bunch of lies and things aren't working the way they're supposed to do, and they start looking. Lots of them wind up in Tibet and all that kind of stuff, but lots of them finally come to church, and that's a blessing. And so the idea of this revival in Ashbury is very encouraging. And as I say, I found it very fascinating that the college shut it down. It's Christian college. But apparently the town tripled in size during that 12 days. And there weren't motel rooms, there weren't restaurants. Finally, the college says, ha, we got finals coming up. That's more important than God. And so they shut it down. But I will tell you, if that stuff is bubbling up, it will continue to bubble. It won't go away. The motivation in the time of prosperity that gets people to turn to God is some kind of a crisis. And what I've described is the crisis that we're going through and what appears to be the start of a reaction to that crisis, which we all hope and pray will continue. One of the things that's also bubbling up is Christian nationalism. I was reading a Jewish website, and this Jewish woman says, I really want to encourage this Christian nationalism, but as a Jew, I really get nervous when Christians start to get serious. So she's sort of ambivalent. She sees that the country needs to go to God, but as a Jew, she's a bit nervous. The other thing that's interesting, another Jewish website, Tablet Magazine, was lamenting the fact that the white purge that is going on in our institutions, Jews are hardest hit because they are looked at as white. So as institutions are getting purged for affirmative action reasons and DEI and whatever, yeah, diversity, equality, and inclusiveness, that's another lie. Diversity and equality are exact opposites. If you're diverse, you're different, which means you're not equal. If you're equal, you're not diverse. I mean, the words don't make sense. And then inclusion indicates that somebody is keeping you from being included. The left is really good with language. And at the end of this, and this guy's a liberal, by the way, he says, liberal Jews are being purged from the institutions that they founded. It's happening all over. But again, this is a crisis because people are being thrown out of things that they thought they were secure in. Now, what are the tactics of Satan? I've talked about this before, but it's been 2 years, so I'm sure you've all forgotten. The first thing that Satan does is temptation. In the garden, he says to the woman, the fruit is beautiful and desirable. And she looks at it and says, wow, that really looks good. If temptation doesn't work, then he tries deception. Now, the first deception is an outright lie. where Satan says, you will not surely die. And she doesn't die on the spot, but she becomes mortal, which means at some point she will. And then if that doesn't work, is what I would call confusion. You get lots of conflicting information, and what you do is you spend a whole lot of bandwidth trying to sort it out. They just keep throwing stuff at you, and you spend all of your time trying to sort it out and figure it out. The next one is illogic and inconsistency. Sort of like our DEI I just talked about, diversity and equality, that's illogical and inconsistent. And you're spending time trying to untangle this mess instead of just moving on. The next one is co-option, which is where Satan's people infiltrate things and take over. Does that sound like what's been going on here? We've got institutions that have been infiltrated and taken over and are no longer doing what they were designed to do. They're doing something else. And then finally, which is where we are now, is coercion. What happens then is the enemy starts being coercive. If he can't confuse you or persuade you or tempt you, at the end of that day, he will be coercive. And what we have now is if you don't get with the program, like, for example, Scott Adams with Dilbert, we'll cancel you. Get rid of your livelihood. In fact, that was interesting. Our attorney general, Kay, says every day, I thank God for the fact that this guy's not on the Supreme Court. Because remember, he was nominated by Obama for the Supreme Court, and it didn't happen. He says, oh yeah, we're going after pro-lifers harder than we're going after Black Lives Matter, because pro-lifers are doing it during the daytime. But the point is, the organization has been infiltrated by evil. So the Justice Department is being used to coerce and get rid of people who are pro-life. So that's where we are. We are sort of at the end stage of evil, which is really encouraging. It's really bad, but we're at the end. And so what now is happening is this awakening has taken place, and this is an opportunity. The opportunity then is to be there when people start questioning. Now, we have a problem here in that we're weird. We're a bunch of Christians that meet on a Saturday morning. So if you're looking for God, this is typically not the first place you'd look. You'd go to the Vineyard or you'd go to Calvary Chapel, and that's fine. So I'm just saying that being weird has its disadvantages. It's got its advantages too, but it's got disadvantages. In fact, I was at Office Depot yesterday. So I walk up to the checkout counter, a lady behind there, and she says, how are you? And I say, I'm greatly blessed and beloved of God. And she just got this big smile on her face, and she gave me a $10 discount. I mean, God's got plenty of money, so we didn't need the $10 discount. But the whole point is, people are out there. They're looking for encouragement. They're looking for reinforcement. Some of them are looking for the truth, that don't know God. Others are like this lady, who I'm sure was a firm believer, was just happy to be encouraged, to have somebody give her a big smile. And when I left, I said, you be blessed. And she said, thank you. I'm sure she's a perfectly normal church-going Christian, but the point is, I gave her some encouragement. That's also important. What you want to do is you want to encourage those who will be encouraged. You want to reach those who will be reached, and you want to not put up with those who are not coming in. And that's not as easy as it sounds. You can confront this stuff with humor, but don't go along with it. And as I say, we are in end times evil right now, late stage evil, and evil has become coercive. So it will not be without cost. Understand that and recognize that there's a cost that has to be paid for the one you serve. Be ready to pay that cost.